The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
This morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Tuesday, the 28th of February, 2023, and you are on the clock with Erin Green, where we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. It is a World News Tuesday with Mr. Mark Palmer. Producers, Mr. Palmer in the Zoom room yet?
I am.
Good morning. How you doing, Mr. Palmer?
Hey, I'm doing well, Erin. You well?
I am pretty good, pretty good. Listen, I just got a couple of little things to clear up at the top of the show, and then we're going to get into our conversation very quickly. I've got a fundraiser I want to share with you guys. This young woman's name is Karen Jones. Now, when I say young, what I mean is young in the sense that I am still young, and she is still young, and y'all young people don't need to worry y'all young little heads about it. But Karen Jones is having a fundraiser. I'm going to tell you why. Karen Jones is, she has mobility challenges, and she uses a motorized wheelchair to get around. And when I say get around, here's what I mean, to get to work, right? As her main means of transportation. I've known Karen Jones for about 20 plus years. And when I see her, she's on the road, moving herself, being responsible for her own mobility. And all of that has sort of been brought to a halt because her motorized wheel scooter is experiencing some issues. And I think she needs to buy a new one. And so I'm asking y'all, if you feel it in your heart, if you're compelled, please share with Ms. Karen Jones. You can call her at 1-242-829-3451, or you can make donations to Commonwealth Bank on Wolf Road, account number 7033-238844. That's account number 7033-238844. And she's hoping to purchase a Afikim Afis Scooter C4 Mobility Scooter 4-Wheel Model FTC. I'm begging y'all to support my friend because she rarely ever asks for anything. In fact, the last time I saw her was a year or so before the pandemic, I think, and I was going over Prospect Ridge from Goodman's Bay side to JFK side, and she was trying to pull that hill, and her scooter had sort of broken down, and we stopped to help her get her secure, a safe place on the road, until a friend came to retrieve her and attempt to fix the scooter. And I tell you, the people in our country with mobility challenges, they're not waiting for handouts. They're doing as much as they can for themselves. And so not only am I asking you, the general public, to support Karen, but to support all people with disabilities, particularly mobility challenges. You could support them financially, economically, or you could support them in some simple matters. If you own a business, ensure that there's disability access in your business. If you frequent a business and there isn't disability access, impress upon the owners of the business and the management how important it is to the country as a whole and to their bottom line, specifically to ensure that as many people as possible can access their business. Another thing we can do as a general public is this. Please stop parking on sidewalks. Sidewalks are what people with mobility challenges should be able to use to traverse the road safely. Stop parking at the access point for sidewalks. We have some sidewalks, not all, but some sidewalks are actually built so people in motorized scooters can come onto and off of the sidewalk with ease, but they can't do that if your vehicle is blocking the sidewalk. All right, I got a couple of happy birthdays for you. I have to say happy belated birthday to my family friend, Kefree Nash. Her birthday was yesterday. I apologize for not getting to it, but this is a good thing because now all the people them can't play your age without giving you any money. I also want to say happy birthday to a colleague in Antigua and Barbuda, Alexandria Wong. Good morning and happy birthday. There are a couple more happy birthday people out there. I hope you all are enjoying this day. Mark, I got to ask you a question. You there?
Yeah. So I'm in the wonderful island of Eleuthera. For our listeners who've been there, it's just a beautiful island. I'm down in Rock Sound, which is the southern part of it. And as you know, they've been having a few little problems.
Well, you know, I wanted to ask you, is it cold in Eleuthera?
No, beautiful. It's beautiful. But as you know, they had water issues, particularly in Tarpon Bay. The houses that were up on the hill, they just weren't getting any water, weren't getting much water. But that seems to have all stabilized. The water is back on. I'm sure you've all read about it in the papers. But guess who I was sitting next to on the flight this morning? One of the chief engineers that's coming into Eleuthera to sort out the water problem. And one of the things he said was, which is really good news, is that there are four plants there, and they're now investing in electrical generational capacity and diesel storage for each of those desalination plants. Because one of the issues is when the power goes down, when government power goes down, desalination plants can't produce. And so that's going to solve a major problem. And that's very good news for Eleuthera. And they're also sorting out, he said one of the problems is there's always, you know, it's a mixture of mistakes made on the ground, but also there's a failure to plan efficiently for the future things. Because, you know, one of the big problems in Eleuthera, which plagues a lot of the islands, is that the government infrastructure is starting to deteriorate. The pipes mm-hmm. were put in there God knows how many years ago, and they're leaking. And so in some areas, up to 50% of the water that's produced is actually leaking into the ground. So that will need to be rectified at some future date. Otherwise, you're just going to have to increase capacity, and a lot of it is just going to waste. So challenges, but it seems like they put a stop to it, and so everyone seems to be much more happier. But, you know, one thing about Bahamian people, they're very stoic. Mm-hmm. You know, I've never met such a group of people that come back from problems. You know, we like to complain, right? But they are very stoic. You know, other country people just fall apart, right? But mm-hmm. Bahamians are a special breed. They just seem to pick themselves up and just keep going.
And I think that's a legacy of being in a hurricane zone, right?
Yeah.
It's a lot of who we are, and our culture is dictated by the environment in which we live and have these experiences, right? I think that's so important when we begin to talk about our relationship to the land, when we start talking about things like sovereign wealth funds, when we start talking about things like housing projects and initiatives, right? When we talk about food security and food sovereignty, our relationship to the land and understanding the extent to which the land itself impacts who we are and directs our behavior. And that's a part of it. Hurricane Floyd, I spent, I think, 9 days without electricity and almost up to 14 days without, because of the lack of electricity, without water. And even the city water was down, the pump was down because of the lack of electricity, and had to tote water for 2 weeks. And I just got myself prepared for it pre-storm, especially when you saw the size of Hurricane Floyd. I think Hurricane Floyd sat over the Bahamas for 3 whole days. It's something that you get used to, and it's something that should be sort of driving our culture holistically, right? Not just when it comes to emergencies or dealing with emergencies and obstacles like hurricanes, major ones. It should drive our culture and sort of inform our temperament, both individually.
Well, you know, one of the thing is, you know, if you look back at the homes that were built in the 40s or before the 60s, they all had, guess what, rainwater catchment tanks. And a mm-hmm. lot of them had the water storage tanks underneath the property themselves. Mm-hmm. Now, that all changed when the building code was changed, I think, around 1967. I think around the time of majority rule, you know, and the idea was to allow people to get into home building, able to build their homes without a lot of extra things. So all the houses built after that didn't have those facilities. I remember I had a water tank in my house where I grew up in Seabreeze, and I once climbed in there and I found a dead pigeon. Oh, now, we've been drinking that water for months.
Oh, wow. Always make sure to put a screen on your water catchment system. But, you know, I think that we need to begin to reinstate, right, some of these policies and parts of our building code. Because, you know, the question of water loss in Eleuthera, have we devised ways to capture the water that is being lost to at least attempt to divert to farming and agriculture initiatives?
It just isn't being done. You know, I think what the pandemic has showed us is that we need to go back to roots and do the things our parents and grandparents did, you know, before we got lazy and went to supermarkets, we didn't grow our food and those types of things. But, you know, water, electricity, you know, when you think about it, we have some of the best weather in the world, and yet we're only 1.5% solarized. Mm-hmm. Which is really incredible when you think about it. Because if you had one solar panel that drove one little solar pump that went into your tank or into your well, you'd be okay after a hurricane.
Yep.
And solar pumps are not that expensive, but it's just, you know, the will and the education and, you know, getting back to those roots and becoming, you know, self-sufficient again.
Yep, absolutely. And Eleuthera is special to me, not just because it's home of the mosquito, because I spent many years going to summer camp there. And because I know that Eleuthera used to be the home of the pineapple, right? Eleuthera produces tons. In fact, most of the mangoes I source in my business come from North Eleuthera. A lot of the produce we used to source comes from North Eleuthera. And I wonder, at the policy level and at a sort of social level, if we are thinking about the ways in which family island dynamics impact our lives in New Providence, right? And in this water issue, what does the lack of access to water, how does that impact agriculture and how much we pay for mangoes in New Providence, or whether we are able to get a mango in New Providence at all, you know, in a season?
I think you're not going to have a problem this year if you drive around, Aaron. You'll see every mango tree is in bloom. I mean, it's incredible. We're going to have a bumper crop in Nassau. But I hear the point that you're making.
Mm-hmm. And I link it to the conversation we were having last week, or at the very end of the show, about the Nord Stream pipeline explosion. And this week, we can see what I think, and what some pundits think, is a link between the blowing up of the Nord Stream pipeline and food insecurity or food security issues across Europe. Here are three headlines that I found online. One is from Fortune magazine, one is from Euronews. And the first is, fruit and vegetables are being rationed in UK supermarkets as farmers warn food resilience is gone. The second is, food shortages, the perfect storm that led to UK supermarkets rationing fruit and vegetables. And the other is, why are there food shortages in the UK? Well, in case people didn't know, in Europe and in the UK in particular right now, specifically the UK, food stores are limiting the number of fresh produce items you can purchase. So if you're buying tomatoes, you could only buy 2 or 3 packs of tomatoes a week. If you're buying eggs, you can only buy 1 carton of eggs a week. And I wouldn't say it's unprecedented, but this is not a normal thing in the United Kingdom.
Well, it's the only time it happened before was during the Second World War and the rationing periods thereafter. Yeah, you see, it has a huge knock-on effect. Now, the good news is that we are linked to the United States, and the U.S. is actually best of all the countries in the world. It is probably best suited to get through this in one piece. And the reason for that is twofold. One, the U.S. is energy self-sufficient, has some of the cheapest energy in the world.
Hold on. Mark, you just say that the U.S. is basically energy self-sufficient?
It has enough to export the liquid natural gas. It has huge shale resources, which are being exploited. And so energy-wise, there will be ups and downs, but medium to long-term, the U.S. is well-positioned. Energy-wise, it's also well-positioned, which the other product that is under serious strain at the moment is fertilizer, which is made from gas and other components, because it gets its potash from Canada. And so there aren't really any supply global supply link issues, because it just comes in the train down from Canada into the U.S. So mm-hmm. the U.S. is going to be a powerhouse in agricultural production over the next few years, and is going to take up some of that slack in the rest of the world. Now, if you're in Europe, it's a different kettle of fish. If you're in the UK, generally speaking, you know, things like wheat, those sort of staple crops, the UK is self-sufficient. But, you know, if you're getting fruits from Holland, other parts of Europe, you know, those chains, those countries are having huge energy problems. For example, in Germany, as a result of the sanctions and also the blowing up of the Nord Stream pipeline, their energy prices are sevenfold. Can you imagine if here in the Bahamas our energy increased sevenfold?
I mean, I could sort of imagine it's going to eventually increase about threefold, eh?
It could. I mean, but let's say we're linked to the, you know, there's all sort of bits of the market is very complex, and how you procure your oil and things. I'm not really an expert on that. But there is enough in the United States that it's not going to be a serious problem for us in the medium to long term. It's what I understand. So we're well positioned, but you know, other countries are not. You know, if you're relying
now, Mark, I want to just touch on the point you made there, right? That because of our proximity to the U.S., we're in the Western Hemisphere. The relationships we have with the U.S., we shouldn't experience, because they shouldn't experience any significant reduction in food production, right? But one of my great concerns is that. There's a almost entirely different regime in the U.S. versus the U.K. in terms of food quality assessment, right? The U.K. and Europe is very strong on their food quality regimes. What products can be used in the U.K.? There are a number of chemicals in particular that just are not able, it's against the law to import them, to produce them, or to manufacture food and consumable products with them. And in the U.S., a lot of those things are just not touched by the regulators. I don't know if that makes me feel any better that the U.S. is going to be able to supply the food needs of a significant portion of the world in the face of this food production crisis in Europe.
Well, you know, it all goes to the market. You know, whoever's going to pay you the most for your product, and that's, you know, the way the free market generally operates. Mm-hmm. You know, this isn't going to happen overnight, but the U.S. has a huge amount of land, amount of farmland that's available for production. Mm-hmm. And so we shouldn't see any major, you know, we're going to see price increases for sure, because energy prices have gone up And, you know, everything is, because, you know, some of the fruit we're getting from long ways away. You know, it's not coming from, say, Florida or Georgia. It's coming from California. You know, energy costs, transportation costs, that's all going to have an impact. But ultimately, long term, we're not going to have as big of an impact as parts of Europe are going to have. But all we're right. going to see those price increases. And I know that's a big concern for the Prime Minister as well at the moment. I saw an article about, you know, capping prices on
consumables,
40 or 50 consumables, and getting the pushback from local businesses for doing that.
Mm-hmm. In fact,
it's a plus and a minus. You know, you're trying to protect the consumer against, say, price gouging and things like that. But equally, the companies have to purchase those products on the open market, and if they go up, they're going to have to pass those costs to some extent to us. The same with energy.
Yep.
You know, it is a challenge. But, you know, saying that, when you look at the large oil companies, they've made record profits. So
yep.
there is an argument to say,
if you,
you know, how can you make the biggest profits? I think Shell made, or Exxon made, $57 billion profit.
Mm-hmm.
Think of it, or some a figure similar. Don't quote me on that. It's somewhere $47 or $57 billion in times of when people are suffering. So that, to me, there's something wrong there. And it seems that the larger corporations are protected, and then the smaller corporations are hit. You know, they're the ones that suffer from government interference.
I know, and then the consumer, you know, I sort of like the hierarchy of it, but big businesses, they take a slide. It's the consumer in this space that's assuming all of the risk, all of the debt, right? Like we're paying everything. There is nothing else. Everything falls on the consumer. So here's this article. Why are there food shortages in the UK? Now, almost everything I read attributed attributed it to weather. Not necessarily climate change, but weather events in Europe, right?
We have weather events in Europe. You know, I lived in Europe. And, you know, the weather isn't stable. And so I don't think that can be the full story behind it. I remember for the years I lived in the UK, we never had any problem. Even if the weather was really bad, that somehow things worked out. But there's clearly some other driving force here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think blaming it all on the weather is just an easy, so we don't have to look at the real problems, which is high energy costs. You know, those farmers have to run their equipment. They,
mm-hmm.
they, you know, a lot of them are just closing down their greenhouses because they cannot, you know, particularly if you're tied into a particular rate, you know, with a supplier, and you can't supply, it's better for you just to not supply, because otherwise you're going to go bankrupt. And so high energy prices are clearly a huge driver in this. And then the high energy prices are leading to, you know, something like 30% of fertilizer production is now closed in Eastern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not allowed to buy Russian, so that's out of the market as well. And so that has a huge effect. So fertilizer costs are, I think, up 160%.
Mm-hmm.
And so you add that as a farmer, you're buying fertilizer, you're buying energy, you're tied in at, say, $2 a pound for tomatoes, and now it's going to cost you $2.50 to produce them. What are you going to do? You're just going to close it down. And so I think there's a huge, the energy side to is a huge driver to this.
Absolutely. Producer, let's go to this call. When we get back from the call, I'm going to read from the article, Why Are There Food Shortages in the UK? And then we're going to take a break. Good morning, caller.
I'm Ms. Green. How you doing now?
I'm good, thank you, Sparky. How you doing?
You know, during the whole COVID, I understand the Hurricane Dorian stuff was a natural phenomenon worldwide, at least in the Caribbean and especially the Bahamas. But when we look at the world news in total, and we see the corporations around the entire world during this, especially during this time what they call the COVID situation, the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
It affected the whole entire earth as we do it, or it was told to us. It is very obvious that most of our leaders around the world benefited for the sickness and the death of the people that both are impoverished.
Spoggy, that's very, very complex.
But what I'm saying is, look at this. Most of your economists and your computer people could very easily come and tell you, CA and all of them. Listen, most of our leaders are what? Accountants, economists, doctors, bankers, you name it, right? Most of them have shares in most of these big-time corporations.
Oh.
Especially lawyers, when they get a client, one of the first
Spoggy.
Things they do is buy shares in their client's business.
Spoggy, I am going to put you on pause. I got to cut you. Here's what I'm saying. We got to be very, very clear with what we're saying, right? Because I don't want one of these very rich people to turn around and try sue me and you for casting aspersions on their name or suggesting, right? Let's tell me what you mean. Are you saying that people in positions of power used that access that they had to information to enrich themselves during the pandemic? Or are you suggesting that, well, government is one of the only businesses that never shut down? That's just so, it's so much. But what I did like about what you said, right, was I thought tomorrow was public disclosure day. Mark, if you don't mind for a second, I thought in all my life, in fact, I wanted to ask you before we sort of got into the show, I think I'm experiencing the Mandela effect, right? All my life, I knew that public disclosures were due on December 31st. And that parliamentarians were given a deadline, like they were given an extension to March, right? Like to the 1st of March. Or the 31st of March, in case they were unable to put together all of their documents. What I'm saying is, I grew up knowing this. But I'm being told now that that's not the case. That the first deadline is March 1st. And then parliamentarians are given an extension from that point. And so the Mandela effect is when an individual or a collective group of people are told that they remember something incorrectly. Like a perfect example is Berenstain Bears. If y'all know the cartoon about the Berenstain Bears. Some people say that it's Berenstain is spelled B-E-R-E-N-S-T-A-I-N. And I actually think I've seen both spellings in my life. But apparently there's only ever been one spelling, and that's S-T-E-I-N, not S-T-A-I-N. And those of us who think that it was ever S-T-A-I-N are incorrect, and we're experiencing what's called the Mandela effect. I think this is the Mandela effect because I know that public disclosures was December 31st. Now, somebody indicated to me that it couldn't be December 31st because that doesn't give the parliamentarian sufficient time to, quote unquote, make an accounting of the last month of the year, right? Because you were earning money up to December 31st to submit your disclosure. But I want to say this. What type of extracurricular jobs or activities do parliamentarians engage that they are unable to make a reasonable, if not accurate, estimation of what they're going to generate and pay out in the last month of the year?
You know, Aaron, I bet if they had companies, they'd make sure they pay their VAT on time. There's no Mandela effect there, because you're going to have somebody jumping down your throat if you don't. So it's not a faulty collective memory. It is just the lack of, I think, because there doesn't seem to be any disincentive.
Well, no, Mark, for real. I mean, this is a serious point I'm making, that I always thought that the disclosure date was December 31st. So last year, when the chairman of the commission Public Disclosures Commission came out and apologized on behalf of parliamentarians because they didn't know that they were supposed to disclose, although they could have accepted an invitation to come on the clock and learn about all of these things, or they could have paid attention, at least in the PLP, to the classes. The PLP offered a whole series of classes for their potential candidates to prepare them for this esteemed job. And still, the commissioner of the public disclosures, the chair of the commission had to get in the paper and apologize on behalf of these people. So I just want to say, first of all, I don't care about Mandela Effect and anything. You need to tell me what type of business you in that you can make your declaration by December 31st. Second of all, please don't, chair of the commission, please don't try that again this year. It is unbecoming of the position that you hold. We the people do not care. You work for us. You don't work for them. Next time you ask us, the people, if we would graciously extend the deadline for the people them. That's how you do it. Please and thank you.
So what, Aaron, what is the Public Disclosure Commission saying at the moment?
Well, at the moment, I think there was an article in yesterday's paper. I don't have it right in front of me. Hopefully, they're just saying, oh, there it is, on the bottom fold of today's Tribune, Mark. The headline is, one or two, in quotations, want disclosure extension. One or two parliamentarians have requested extra time to disclose their assets and liabilities, according to Chairman of the Public Disclosure Commission, Bishop Victor Cooper, said yesterday. The deadline for officials to file their disclosure is March 1st. He was contacted by the Tribune to find out how many parliamentarians had made the filings ahead of the deadline. He was unable to say and only told his newspaper that it was a lot. I want to ask these people, is 21 Savage running my government? That's the only person I expect to respond to me with the words, a lot. The article goes on, quotation, I can say this because I just spoke with my office recently, and I can report that a lot of people have filed and are trying to stay on time with their filing, and so that's an excellent sign for us. No, it's not. It's not an excellent sign for us. First of all, why did you have to just spoke with your office? Weren't you in the office? Why are you not in the office, sir? And it's not an excellent sign of anything. A lot is not an excellent sign. We would like numbers. And it's the day before. Why are you focusing so much energy on saving these people from embarrassment? This is the second year in a row. The quotation goes on to say, I've not gotten any major reports about extensions. There may be one or two or thereabout, but generally people are filing and happily. They are doing it in time prior to the deadline. I don't care about whether they're doing it happily or not, sir. And I say this only to say that perhaps you don't understand the assignment. I don't usually like to say, but they are not your friends. They are not your friends. We are your friends. In fact, we are not your friends. You work for us. You're here to provide oversight for us, the people. Bishop Cooper said he was going to the office later this week to find out how many had filed their financial disclosures. The process is that this is a very taxing thing for members of parliament and senior government officials, so they have to make sure that the documents that they are sending us have the necessary verifications of what they're saying, because if it's not completed, we have got to send it back out to them and tell them, look, these documents are not accompanied by the necessary verified documents. So it's a very tax process, he added. Is it the clerk?
If you were a member of parliament and had to fill in your form, how quickly could you do it?
I finish. I just did it.
So they must have plenty of assets, right? Because I would have thought if you had a house, a bank account, boom.
So, listen, so I'll be able to speak to you more specifically once I go into the office, but I've gotten reports that generally a number of them are sending in, and I'm very pleased with that. I just need to know, how can I apply for this job? I like a job that doesn't require me to do the job. Sorry for the pause, Mark. I'm very upset at you, Mark, for pointing out this article to me, because we could have given Bishop Cooper a day off. I mean, I don't know if he needs another day off, but I just need the clerk, if it's the clerk of the House of Assembly that prepares new chairs for their role in these commissions. Has somebody not sat down and spoken with the good bishop and explained to him what his function is and what the tone is? See, what the tone is that he should use. Maybe he should sit with the prime minister. Mark, I know it's 10:43. When I finish this, we're going to go to a break, and then we're going to come back onto the world news portion. But I have to say this. Maybe he needs to speak to the prime minister about this matter of tone. Because the prime minister explained to me this morning that he spoke with he said, David says he never shifted tone on issue. That's the headline in today's Guardian. And I just want to say this. There's a difference, sir, between compassion and zero tolerance. Unless, of course, you're a Bahamian parent, in which case there is no difference. There's something that we're still working on as humans in this realm called the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. If you're a Bahamian parent, there's no difference between zero tolerance and compassion. But, sir, don't let your press secretary get you caught up in an unnecessary game of words and semantics, okay? There was a definite tone change. You don't talk to us the way that you talk to these foreign diplomats. And what you have to do is to ensure that the people can trust you. That's it. That's all you got to do. Ensure that the people can trust you. And right now, I'm not saying your tone shifted, but it's a little shifty over there. Ah, boy. There's just so much. There's just so much. How are you actively engaging, right, this process of determining the status of migrants and deportations of irregular migrants without any word from the Department of Labor on the status of the workforce, the number of Bahamians available to work in working and available to work in the construction industry, as you present to us all of these projects, including the multi-million dollar project groundbreaking in Abaco yesterday and the groundbreaking ceremony for the Golden Yolk Egg Production Project. Anyway, Mark, let's go to the phone line. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Good morning, Robin. How are you?
Good morning. This is Aaron.
Aaron.
That's okay. You make the check out to Aaron. That's all.
Listen, I would like to know, right, mm-hmm. what these MPs and ministers be thinking of when they go to sleep and wake up. Let me tell you why. The small businessman, in the first 3 months of the year, we have to pay VAT, national insurance, business license, inland revenue. You got to pay your regular bills, pay your other bills, and you have very little left, although you might have made the bulk of your money in the Christmas. But that money goes down to taxes because they double up on everything. And nobody in the House of Assembly sees this as a problem for the small man. Now, I'm in business, and I'm feeling it every day because I want to be in line with my taxes.
Mm-hmm.
But it is very difficult. I can't replace my stock.
Mm-hmm.
Because all the money, when you got that kind of money going out and not coming back into the business, you're looking at some serious problems, like the gas station people say. They're looking at some serious problems. And mm-hmm. I am feeling the pinch.
Mm-hmm.
They have to spread this thing out throughout the year, man. Common sense should kick in with these knuckleheads we got up there, man. Because the average black man is land rich and cash poor.
Mm-hmm.
They say we don't have $1,000 in the bank, but yet they want us to pay all these taxes in the first 3 months of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how does that make any sense? Nobody up there could think that is a book. But you know what I found out, though? People who make policies don't have businesses.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of them. And anything comes to their head when they go to bed, they wake up and come and say, this is a good idea, let's do this. And then everybody else can get it. Like, they can't put in their thing for the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody says nothing to them. But let me not pay my taxes. They say they come in to take it from my rent, or they're going to dig up my building and carry it up there by them until I pay it.
Yeah.
So why is it a two-way thing? And this is going on from, I mean, Minnis tried his best with it.
Yeah.
And he still didn't succeed. Why can't they fill out their things like they want us to do? They want us to be law-abiding citizens, but not them.
Yep. This is it. They have to set the example from the top.
What I intend to do, Robert, is I'm going to start next year. I'm not going to pay my taxes. I'm going to pay it and I'm going to spread it out. Although they wanted it to wait 3 months, I'm not going to do that.
But do my
favor. I'm going to spread it out throughout the end of the year.
But keep it in escrow. You know, do like they do. Oh, no, it was in escrow.
No, I got to make the money.
Ah, true.
So
true.
I've got to pay it instead because, see, I'm getting ready to close one of my businesses down because I'm not making the money.
Yeah.
And that's people that are going to be unemployed.
Yeah.
And because of the amount of taxes I have to come up with, I cannot go on like this. I don't see it going on like this for me next year. Unless by some strange stretch of the imagination, the whole Obama's is employed.
I got you. I understand.
So please tell the people of their mind to go to bed and wake up with some with sense that would come to their head. We cannot pay all these taxes in the beginning, the first 3 months of the year, honestly, if they want us to be honest.
Thank you very much, caller.
I'm striving to be honest.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So they're going to cause me to be dishonest now.
Nah.
No, I'm telling you. You have no choice.
Systems. You're right. Systems, right?
Yeah.
Dysfunctional and malformed systems cause that. Listen, I got another caller on the line.
Bye-bye.
And you inspired me just now.
Okay.
Let's go to this next caller. Good morning, caller. You on the clock.
Good morning, Aaron. Good. How you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How you doing?
And good morning to your people. Good morning, Bama.
Morning.
Yeah, you need Lucha. Eric,
yeah.
It's a beautiful place on my place, Island. I've been to it in my own country.
Yes, sir.
And it's green. It loves sweet mangroves, nice people.
And it's red. Don't forget the red. Red soil, red people, it's nice. Red mango, it's nice.
That's right. I mean, good morning to the Carries. So they're the one of the first people, the most beautiful ladies I've ever met. And there's the Carries. One of my second Island, I fall in love with it. I like Andres too, but I really fall in love with Lucha.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of hills. I never knew too much of hills. I would love to be a host down there.
Mm-hmm.
Farmers in a good place. Wonderful fresh air.
Listen, you say that,
okay.
Pumpkin Eater, you know how you say that there are lots of hills there, right? Mm-hmm. I learned yesterday that the country motto, I think, for Rwanda is land of 1,000 hills, right? Now, did you know, long, long time ago when the continent split apart, right? It was one big landmass, they say, called Pangaea. And then they split apart. Parts of Eleuthera, I believe, have split off from the west coast of Africa. And a part of the reason I believe that is that red soil.
Yeah. And that pink sand, that, where the pink sand comes from. Boy, I've been out in Apple.
That red soil, it may be just that. I mean, I know Rwanda is landlocked, it's not on the coast, right? But that be something, eh? The same red soil that we grow our pineapples in is the same red soil that our ancestors rubbed their toes in.
That red soil you talk about, that ain't only in Eleuthera, you know.
No, it in Suriname, too.
No, I don't mean to mention the Bahamas, man.
Okay.
I talk about that red soil. It's Andres, Red Bay, known for its red soil.
And Cat Island?
Yeah, rich soil.
Yeah.
Farming. We are a rich nation of culture, agriculture too.
But it means nothing. It means nothing, Pumpkin Eater, if we can't create policies that support farmers and vendors and business people through tumultuous global times.
Yes, and preserve it. Be careful when you develop the island. Don't overdevelop the guy did with New Providence. Don't make the same mistake with New Providence.
Mm-hmm. And you gotta keep check on the the development, the pace of development, and the ethos or the philosophy underpinning the development, right? Because taking a look at both Exuma and Eleuthera over the last couple of weeks, I am enamored by the development that Exumans and Eleutherans have been able to generate without central government.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, it depends on when it comes over here, they love it. But you mentioned Karen, you know, a good friend of mine. She's a wonderful athlete. She didn't tell you she was an athlete, super athlete?
No.
Yeah. She had several gold medals. During her time as a youth, but she didn't get to go to the Olympics. If she'd have gone to the Olympic, the Paralympic Olympic, she'd have been super.
Yeah, man, I'm going to have Karen Jones on for the month of May, Women's Month. But Pumpkin Eater, let's start thinking, and I want to say it publicly because I want other people, if you hear the idea and you like the idea, run with the idea. I think we need to honor Iris Adley and her contributions.
And Karen Jones.
But you know, Iris is past. Karen is still kicking.
Of course, she did it, definitely.
Let's create a mechanism to generate funds for members of the community in honor of Iris Adley. I want to throw that out to the public. But Pumpkin Eater, I got to go. I got another caller.
Sure, you can talk more about that because a lot in the trend, when we go to Independent.
Yeah.
Phyllis Audris also is another lady we could talk about, too.
Yes, sir.
Have a good day.
Without a doubt. Thank you much. Just before I go to this next, let's go to the caller. Good morning, caller.
Yeah, morning, Aaron.
How you do?
Hey, you know, you was talking about the disclosure, right?
Yes.
I don't think they're serious about that. They have laws maintaining that and all, and nothing has happened.
Mm-hmm.
Supposed to pay a fine, if I'm mistaken, if you don't disclose on time.
I think there was actually jail time, possibly, and I thought that's why they don't take it further.
Yeah, you see, and I'll say this too. Why you have the bishop as the chairman, but somebody who cut out for that job to be in charge of that?
Yeah, sure, the bishop is just too nice of a guy.
I always say, you put some retired judge or assistant commissioner of...
You know who I'm putting on it?
Assistant commissioner of police or somebody like that.
I would put on it former Speaker of the House, Houston Moultrie.
Yeah, well, that would be a good person. But again, they ain't taking it serious about that. Another thing, they say, okay, before election, they tell them the deadline to put in your nomination, whatever. I bet you that is being, eh?
Oh, yeah. On time.
And it is be printed in the papers and everything.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt.
Okay, now, they don't disclose. Even those ones who disclose, you don't see nothing be printed in the papers.
Yeah, it's been a minute, but as soon as I see it printed, I can bring it to the public's attention.
You see, so that's what I'm saying. It's supposed to be printed. It don't happen. There nobody say nothing. And if they be disclosing, that will have to stop the corruption.
Yes.
You see? But see, that's the problem. They everybody go in there and play crazy. You know it's a deadline. They don't meet it because the Bahamian people don't stand up to them about it. But anyhow, thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Mark, let me get to the text, and then we're going to get back to our conversation. Good morning. Not only the sidewalk, people need to stop parking in handicapped spots. And I got another text here that says, Ms. Green, I love this topic today because recently I have been a real tool. I admit, that's like an idiot, right? He's saying, I admit, I parked in a handicapped parking in Harbor Bay Shopping Plaza. I am from Fox Hill and I'm a tool, but not no more. Please ask your guests to forgive me. I know they done forgive you. Don't watch nothing. Aaron, no matter who chairs that committee, nothing is going to change. The sitting MP for South Beach served as the last chairman. Did he disclose? Wait, hold on. The sitting MP, the person who's sitting now, I can take a picture of this. I have to go home and verify that because that can't be true. How could the sitting MP for South Beach serve as the last chairman and all the people didn't disclose? That MP should have taken it on as a personal challenge, having sat in that role to ensure that all of their colleagues complied. with the law. He said, with the law, not with my feelings, with the law. Anyway, that's the music. It's taking us a long time to get to the break. Mark, we're going to a break. To the audience, you guys, stay tuned. We're coming right back to close out the show. You're On the Clock with Aaron Green on 96.9 FM.
Wednesday, March 8th, 2023 is International Women's Day, a day celebrated globally as a focal point in the women's rights movement, bringing attention to issues such as gender equality, reproductive rights, and violence and abuse against women. Equity isn't just a nice to have, it's a must have. A focus on gender equity needs to be a part of every society's DNA, and it's critical to understand the difference between equity and equality. Guardian Media wants all Bahamians to truly embrace equity. It's not just something we should say, not something to just write about. It's something we need to think about, know, and embrace. It's what we should believe in, unconditionally. This International Women's Day, Guardian Media wants you and your company to embrace equity. Guardian Media wants you to celebrate the women in your organization this International Women's Day by placing them in an ad in our International Women's Day supplement. For more information, call 302-2300, 302-2300, or call your account executive. International Women's Day, Wednesday, March 8th, 2023. Embrace equity.
Music lovers, it's time once again for the annual Jazz in the Gardens Festival at Hard Rock Stadium, Miami Gardens, March 11th and 12th. Your national fly carrier, Bahamas Air, is ready to take you there once again. Airfare to Miami starting at $263 round trip, taxes included. Group rates are available. Get your round trip airfare and see all of your favorite artists live at this year's Jazz in the Gardens. Book online at bahamasair.com or call 702-4140.
Good morning and welcome back to On the Clock with Aaron Green on this World News Tuesday with Mr. Mark Palmer. Mr. Palmer.
Yes.
Listen, my apologies. We run out of time. We sort of got back into the Nord Stream conversation, but we didn't get into the conversation about the Norfolk Group's submission questions for COVID-19 commission.
I think that is a very, that was in the, actually in Newsweek a couple of weeks ago, because you know, when an airplane crashes, the Federal Aviation Administration then conducts a detailed and thorough investigation. That's not to find out, you know, scapegoat, but just to make sure it doesn't happen again. Mm-hmm. And because of our collective response to the COVID pandemic, it's constituted one of history's biggest public health mistakes. Because of the older risk, people weren't adequately protected, while many ineffective COVID restrictions, you know, like lockdowns, mm-hmm. mandates, etc., generated long-term collateral public health damage, and both have yielded excess deaths. So what the Norfolk Group is saying, that, you know, public health crashed during those 2 years, and just like an airplane investigation, we should have a COVID commission. And they raised 10 areas of questions that they would like to have answered. So maybe we can look at that in more detail next week. But I think it's very important because, you know, we were told a lot of things during the pandemic that mm-hmm. turned out to have not either, you know, that turned out not to be true.
Yeah.
And we need to make sure that if we do have another pandemic, that we have accurate information from our public health
officials. And did we use these experiences to build the next response? You know, the last thing I wanted to say, Mark, as we close out the show, the question of the Prime Minister and his tone, you know, I want to be fair. You know, the real critique is this, is that the Prime Minister is a human and he's a Bahamian, so he cannot be a monster. But he must acknowledge that at this current time, his administration and the government in which he leads does not have the capacity, the collective capacity, to operate with compassion or humanely. And the buck stops with him. Before he speaks, he must measure his words and ensure that he can deliver on all of his promises. We gotta go, Mark. Thank you so much. Look here. I need you to go talk to the mango trees. Tell them I still love them. I haven't seen them in a while. I'll be back soon.
All right. Take care. See you next week.
Thank you. Have a great day. Enjoy Luthra. Thank you to the audience. Guardian Radio AM with Cecil Nuri is up next. Have a great day.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.